Hey, glad you can make it. And welcome to the Employee Cycle Podcast, where we talk to HR innovators, thought leaders, and even some disruptors about the latest in HR trends, HR tech, and you guessed it, HR data. Well, you've heard enough of me talking. Now let's start the show. Welcome back to the Employee Cycle HR Podcast. I'm your host for today, Bruce Marable, and I'm excited to chat with Ben Brooks, founder and CEO of Pilot, the executive coaching platform powered by technology. And today we're going to talk about personalizing employee coaching. Welcome to the podcast, Ben.
Thanks, Bruce. Glad to be here.
So excited for you to be here. As tradition, we always like to have a really big applause for our podcast guest. Thank you for being here. Matt, making HR exciting, one podcast at a time. So, to kick things off, I have to ask you the same question that I always ask as the first question, which is, how did you end up in the HR space, and how did you end up offering solutions to HR professionals?
Well, that is a great question. I had never, ever guessed or thought or planned to be in HR. And it definitely, HR found me. I didn't find it, but as soon as I found it, it seemed like a great fit. I have a degree in marketing and leadership studies. I'd worked with a big defense contractor, Lockheed Martin. I've been, Lean Six Sigma black belt, did operations, I've done management consulting, all sorts of different things, supply chain. And so certainly not a person with a background in HR, but during the recession, based on some diversity and inclusion work I had been working on, kind of a side job related to employee resource group that I had founded, I got involved in HR and our engagement survey and some things, and ended up doing an externship at the parent company, Marsh & McLennan, of my operating company, Oliver Wyman. And I worked for a wonderful guy named Orlando Ashford. And Orlando is now the president of Holland America Cruise Lines. And at the time, he was the head of HR at Marsh & McLennan Companies, which is a Fortune 250 company, owns Mercer for a lot of people that are in the HR space, and Marsh does employee benefits and things. And Orlando, seduced me into HR, and he had a pretty interesting background himself. But I really just saw a wide open opportunity where the function of HR, I think, was needed more than ever, but yet the capability of HR in a lot of ways wasn't quite where it needed to be to support the business. And so I got to bring in a lot of my skills and operations and, change in project management and marketing into HR. And it just turned out to be a great fit.
Nice. And so that brought you today to founding and building Pilot, correct?
Yeah. So a couple moves kind of in between then, but I had, worked for Orlando as a kind of interim head of talent management for our company as we were coming out of recession and restructuring and a variety of other things. And then I was a vice president and then a senior vice president of, human capital and talent management at Marsh. And then I left to create an executive coaching company of my own and business coaching, working with entrepreneurs and executives all over the country. And I live in New York City and I had been doing that now for about 4.5 years. And then, in the process of that, had the idea of saying, hey, how do we SaaSify? How do we leverage modern technology and really democratize coaching and help people, be happier at work, feel more empowered, be smarter, and kind of teach them these secrets that I fortunately learned in my 20s, having an executive coach and being very kind of empowered and self-directed in my career, and kind of make that available to everyone.
So your company Pilot now is providing coaching. Can you tell us a little bit about what Pilot does?
Totally. So Pilot works with companies to help them engage, retain, and develop their highest value talent. So much like working with an executive coach, we work with employees on a weekly basis over the period of a year to start to make their development and their career a focus and a priority. For the employee, that involves a weekly sort of activity or coaching assignment. Typically takes 10 to 15 minutes, and then they get together for a group live video-based coaching session once a month. And again, this program takes place over the course of a year and covers things not just related to their job, but their broader career, their reputation, their brand, their relationships, some aspirations and skills, how they use their skills in the community, et cetera. And again, designed to mimic executive coaching, but there's two fundamental issues that we found with executive coaching. It's very, very powerful, but it's also very, very expensive. And it's the sort of thing that is typically only done during very high opportunity cost hours, which are 9 to 5, when people typically have very little time or headspace to focus on their development. So we just took 96% of the expense out of traditional executive coaching, and we're delivering it in an on-demand way. And one of the interesting things is we, you know, see when our members, our end users, do their weekly coaching assignments, and disproportionately it is early in the morning, evenings, and weekends. And so our hypothesis is sort of proven correct that people, that's when they're spending time to kind of develop themselves. It's not on their lunch, and it's not, you know, in the middle of the morning, because in particular, we're working with very high performing employees. So if they're salespeople, they're billing, busy selling. If they're coders, they're busy coding. You know, if they're finance people, they're busy doing analysis. And so we're capturing them on their commutes, after they put their kids to bed, on a couch, et cetera, in a way that, you know, makes, again, their development a priority, but it leans into the kind of lifestyle that they already have.
So it seems that there's traditional coaching, which is expensive and also not very personalized. And then there's the type of coaching that you or your company is providing, which is much more cost effective. It allows the, the participants to be able to get the coaching in a more flexible time, mm-hmm. and where it's more, where it works for them. But then it seems like you're also a lot more consistent as well. So can you dig into a little bit more about the benefits of personalized coaching and what you're doing versus traditional coaching?
Yeah, I mean, a good traditional executive coach should have a pretty bespoke and personal approach. They may have certain methods or assessments or things that they do, but if they're a good coach, and if you're working with me one-on-one, you know, it'd be very bespoke to one's needs. But, you know, again, the problem can be the consistency, you know, schedules aligning, travel, or all sorts of other things that kind of gets in the way. And, you know, and the way I think about it is we're not trying to, you know, take out existing executive coaching. I think of it almost like an international flight. You're on a 777 and there's international first class and there's champagne up there and caviar and cashmere. And it's great. But we typically find that it's, you know, 10 or 20, 30 people at a company, almost regardless of the size of the company, they get executive coaching, because executive coaching is somewhere between about $15,000 to $70,000 per employee per year, depending on the coach. So it's, again, very, very expensive. And so, you know, the way we look at it is we're giving your employees that you want to upgrade to some class of service between first and coach. We're like the international business, and we're giving an upgrade to the kind of underserved, the folks that in a talent review, whether it's a 4 or 9 box, would be kind of in that upper right quadrant. Folks that, you know, are really hard to recruit, really hard to retain, maybe diverse talent, certain technical talent. And so, you know, what we try to do on the consistency part that you point out, Bruce, is really make sure that there's a drumbeat that, and we take inspiration from things like meditation and wellness, you know, fitness, savings, and a lot of the key to behavior change is, you know, incremental and consistent change that lasts. And so we take a coaching approach that rather than, you know, going to a 3-day conference, which is amazing, you go home with a binder and it's great and that kind of fizzles out after a month and you forget a lot of what you learned. We're trying to just infuse it a little bit more like Fitbit, where it's just the sort of focus, like my parents have Fitbits and they are obsessed with getting their 10,000 steps every day. And, you know, we make Pilot the sort of thing that people get very focused on, making sure that every week counts and they're moving their career forward every single week.
So a lot of listeners love our podcast because we create a framework around all the different topics that we talk about to get very technical and practical so that they can actually leave the podcast and hopefully put something in place.
Sure.
So let's start with the benefit. Why would an HR professional who's listening to you talk about coaching today want to even do this in the first place? What kind of benefits and ROI should they be expecting to get from this?
Well, you know, coaching is an absolutely booming industry, and the vast majority of employees, you know, over 90% of the members that work with Pilot have never had a coach or someone they consider a formal mentor or advisor. You know, mentoring programs are going kind of out of style. If you Google why mentoring programs fail, there's, I think, 1 million results. And, you know, the idea I think that that we're really focused on in is helping the employee take more responsibility for their career, really having, you know, being a part of this macroeconomic shift and people in learning, development, and talent management. Many of them are seeing a big shift towards employee-owned company supported development and career advancement. And so, you know, companies are changing rapidly. So the idea of creating pathways and these other things, you know, you're reorging, you're merging, you're changing industries all the time, that those things almost don't even exist anymore. And so this is really about having the employee meet management and HR halfway and really empowering the employee to satisfy some of their own needs. And, you know, I recently was meeting with a former colleague of mine. He's the head of HR at the NBA. And he was talking about the five employees that had quit that month from the NBA. And he sat down with all of them. He's kind of did these exit interviews and said, why? And all five of them had very manageable issues, things that weren't working for them, things they wanted to change or tweak. But not a single one of them had spoken up or tried to solve them. They just took jobs somewhere else. And so we're really into, you know, really preventing situations like that from happening on the kind of on the downside of like preventing attrition. But then also on the upside, if you think of the traditional talent review and you think of the y-axis or the x-axis of performance, the y-axis of potential, there's a lot of tools and things out there to help maximize performance. There's very little out there to help maximize potential and fulfillment of potential. So, you know, I think for the HR person out there, you know, we're a potential maximization tool where you say to people that, you know, this group of employees could be more. How do we help them and stretch them to grow and be more? And if you look at almost any engagement survey from any company, you know, it's just a Culture Amp event this week. And, you know, I think almost, you know, without exception, learning and or growth and development is always one of the top three findings for their customers when they do surveys. And so this is a way, again, to answer, you know, employees and say, hey, here is a way where you can grow and develop and you can be in the driver's seat of what that looks like. So it's contextual and relevant to what you want in your life.
Interesting. So assuming that the HR listeners out there buy in to what you're saying, how do they now get buy-in from their leadership team or their CEO? And what are some of the reasons why you think that a CEO or leadership team would say, you know what, this is a bad idea, and how can they overcome that?
Well, I think, you know, there's obviously got to be a business rationale. So things, if things are sort of like nice to haves, it's difficult for an HR person to get money or make the ask. In particular, though, I think that helping, you know, employees and, you know, reducing kind of the burden and pressure on management to be all things to all people and increasing employee capability, employee ownership, employee responsibility in their own careers and development, I think alone is a pretty fantastic sort of outcome. But we really, you know, are looking to make sure that employees are being very sort of alert and aware and not kind of going into work and checking in and clocking in and going out like Groundhog Day. And I think that, you know, as we talk to companies that, you know, one organization we're working with has a group of salespeople that are top performing, and they want them to potentially, you know, be more aggressive about wanting promotions. Very interesting sort of scenario. But they have a lot of people that are very happy. They're high comp people, but they need them to kind of, you know, push themselves to grow to the next level. So like, that's a use case. We've got other folks that have, you know, been in the one organization for 10 years on average, and that's a time a lot of people leave, and they want people to kind of reinvigorate their careers. They don't feel the need to leave. We've got other folks that, you know, were at a very high growth company, and growth has sort of stalled, and so promotion rates are down, and they want people to have a sense of accomplishment and advancement in their career, even if they can't get, you know, near-term promotions at the kind of rapid rate that they used to. So I think, you know, whatever the HR person is sort of like dealing with, you know, in particular, one of the things that we're getting, the phone's kind of ringing off the hook lately, is high potential programs. The people want to create a leadership development, a high potential program, and that's a lot of work. And you can hire companies to do it, you know, but they're often incredibly expensive and very time consuming. And so some people are using Pilot to supplement their leadership or development or high potential program. Some people are using it like as the program itself. So we're talking to some banks and some other organizations like that. And we're working with a national nonprofit right now in that regard. But it's a way that because I'm a former HR person and we've got people who used to work in HR on my team, we're very empathetic to the fact that HR has so much variability in their jobs, so much pressure, And often not from the backgrounds to design programs and products and do the change management and project management to roll them out and whatnot. So we're really into helping the HR person look and be successful internally, because our product is so easy for both the members and the HR person to use. And we can just get up set up rapidly. And compared to probably 99% of HR technology out there, we are like the easy button in terms of, you know, sign a brief contract and we can get started, and we don't do IT integration or security things that, you know, drill holes in your firewall. We make it just very easy because we want to help that HR person create visible value to both their internal client that they're a business partner to, as well as to the employees, and say, hey, we brought this to you. We're doing this for you, because nothing helps make an HR person more successful than having something tangible and visible that other people value.
The analogy that you just gave in regards to employees needing to be more vocal about getting promotions and raises, I like that you brought up that analogy, because it also focused on another question that I had around, should HR be responsible for this? In your analogy and example, you said that it was a sales team. And a lot of times in big pharma companies or financial services companies, if there's any type of coaching or L&D for a specific department, let's call it sales, it may not actually go through HR. It may go through L&D, which may not be a part of HR, or it might go through VP of sales, which is definitely a totally different department. So although this is an HR podcast, should HR professionals be responsible for this? And when you're working with companies, are you always working with the HR team, or are you also working with the head of department?
That's a great question. Well, you know, on the idea of kind of self-advocacy, I'll just mention two things in self-advocacy. So, you know, one, we spoke to some career scientists early on when we were, you know, creating this company. And people had researched on a longitudinal basis people's success and satisfaction, which of course is very distinct from success, in careers. And they found that self-advocacy, the degree to which someone speaks up for and owns their kind of member role in, you know, in making requests and negotiating and getting their needs met, was the number one determinant of satisfaction in a career. Right? So if you advocate for yourself, you'll generally be satisfied. And that's very different than, you know, a HR recognition program or a, you know, talent development program or something. That's the something that the employee does for themselves. And so we actually kind of created this this periodic table of advocacy sort of thing that we use in our product, that really, I think a lot of times people, when they advocate, you think of, you know, promotions and raises. And in reality, there's often a lot of pressure. There's market stuff and compression on comp and all sorts of different things, budgets that, you know, make that difficult. But in reality, oftentimes the things that employees can advocate for that they don't think about are ones that provide them much more satisfaction than a 5% raise. In particular, if they're already making sort of like decent or reasonable sort of money. So a big part of, you know, what we try to teach employees through our coaching process is, you know, maybe what you need to advocate for is to support a different client group, because that would be stimulating. Or maybe what you advocate for is to help with the implementation of Salesforce, or to work, you know, maybe it's to help improve your Glassdoor ratings, you know, whatever it may be that we think of also, you know, maybe you need a second monitor. Or you know, you just want access to a certain information or to attend a certain meeting so you can do your job better. Those are often the things that we're finding from our members that actually really makes the difference. And they're things that management can say yes to like right away. We had in one instance, someone who, you know, management, I think had empathized with the employee, thinking that they would, were having a family soon. And this is a female, and you know, I thought she was very happy, very high value talent, senior person. And this person really wanted an international assignment, but the company had no idea. And through pilot, you know, she raised her hand and within 30 days was on a 4-month assignment in Zurich. And they had a critical need. She was a perfect fit, but it was kind of like ships passing in the night, where they had no idea that she wanted to do this and she had no idea that they had a need. And so a lot of it is just a conversation and speaking up, and what resulted in a massive win-win in that regard. So that's kind of on the advocacy piece. On the piece around, does it go through HR or through department head, is a great question. You know, the majority of our customers so far are actually not HR. Not that we're certainly against that, but, you know, as an early stage company, you find out who ends up buying the product, right? Rather than saying who should. And what we're finding is, you know, we've got folks that are C-suite at large companies, or you know, one or two levels from the CEO of large companies that are leading, you know, IT, leading revenue, leading sales, that are buying, you know, operations, COO. Like, these are some of the titles of the people that have bought the product, and they've been sort of the champion. And fortunately, we get to work with HR to help implement, because HR really understands how to implement things typically well, because they have a very good sense of the context and the culture and things. And so we partner with HR in that regard. But it's been interesting to see that we've got a lot of folks that, you know, sometimes, you know, leaders that are even frustrated with their HR groups, and they say, gosh, it always takes forever for them to come up with something, or what they come up with isn't that great. I'd love to invest some money and just do something that I can kind of turnkey. So it's kind of been a mix. But we built the product in a way that, for whether it's HR or a department head or a C-suite executive, regardless, I think a lot of the needs are similar, which is busy professionals that have a lot going on and need something to happen quickly, that's high quality, that has good measurable analytics, and that we sort of run and manage. And that's exactly what we do. And we just had a customer last week, provide us, we did an evaluation with them about what they felt about things. And she's the buyer, and she's actually in HR. She's a head of L&D. And she said, you know, as the buyer of this product, I was absolutely floored at how little I had to be involved for it to be successful. And that, to me, is success. And so she's got a lot on her plate. And the fact that we're able to, you know, do the lion's share of the work and have it be successful, again, is a very different thing than a lot of HR technology products, which then require the HR person to be the super administrator, program manager, change management expert, et cetera, which is a great burden. Oftentimes you need a whole headcount just to operate a piece of software.
For the HR listeners out there who actually want to own this and want to be responsible for this because they believe in their heart that this should definitely fall under the scope of HR, what advice could you give them to be more proactive to really make sure that this type of coaching is happening?
I think the biggest thing is to make the ask. You know, Pilot, for instance, is a very affordable product, and the dollars spent are typically it's a very reasonable ask. A lot of times, what I see, having been a former HR person and working with HR people a lot, is there's a lot of risk aversion. You know, HR, you know, as a function, is a risk reduction function. You're reducing, you know, liability from litigation and compliance and labor laws, as well as, you know, reducing cost exposure and variability on expense related to people, which is often the largest expense for a lot of companies. So oftentimes HR is really in the business of reducing risk. And so when you propose a new idea as an HR person, that's sort of a risky thing. And that kind of goes the swimming upstream compared to what most HR people are doing most days, which is to reduce risk, not to take on risk. And I think what we are, you know, when I think about HR people wanting to make this sort of difference, though, it's the HR people that take the risk. Those are the ones that their careers sort of sail. That's where they get promoted and they get poached and they get big bonuses and all those other things, because, you know, that's what across industries senior leaders are wanting out of HR people, is the folks that have the, you know, entrepreneurial gumption and ingenuity and creativity and innovation and flexibility to bring new ideas and better ways of doing things to the table and to, like, get them done, rather than just being this kind of obligatory operational crank, which I think a lot of HR people I know or have been for a while and are fatigued about. And they desire to be more and to, you know, have a bigger impact and to increase their value to the organization. So bringing things, you know, like Pilot or a variety of other HR technologies or programs or consulting in can make a huge difference.
Got it. So I'm an HR professional. I'm listening to you and I say, you know what, Ben, this is awesome. You definitely sold me on why coaching is important. I already had a feeling that it was important, but now you've definitely reinforced that feeling. I was able to get buy-in, maybe get a little bit of budget, get some resources behind this. Where do I start? What kind of plan do I need to have? Am I trying to figure out which employees to coach first? Am I looking at this from a department standpoint of which department needs to increase performance? Do I need to get some data or some metrics to track performance or work with some other department heads? What do I do? Because I've never done this before.
Well, that's, you know, first thing you do is you call us, you reach out, and we'll help you with all that. I think we are very empathetic to what, you know, the people being kind of on this journey. And the idea of like picking who to get coaching is, to your point, Bruce, a thing that people think about a lot. And it's a very legitimate thing. And we basically have a 3-step process that's, you know, we say it's as easy as 1, 2, 3 to get started, which is, you know, we have a conversation, you get the budget approval, and we figure out the number of people involved and sign a contract. And then we often figure out the exact who, you know, like how many first and then who later. We have a process called a membership draft. And there's a tendency in HR, and this is a very bad habit of HR that HR sort of needs to get over, of what I would call kind of giving, you know, the most medicine to the sickest patients, right? To your lowest performing teams or managers or employees. And nothing is more demotivating to high performing employees than one, seeing low performing employees still keep their jobs, frankly, and managers and groups and teams. And two, to get like extra help and support from HR when the high performers are not getting anything. I mean, if you're, you know, a hotel or an airline or something, you're giving disproportionate sort of perks and attention and care and love to your best people. You know, I read Starwood Hotels, you know, 2% of their customers generate 30% of their profit, right? So you can bet that 2% gets something different. And so, you know, what we do is we think of it just a little bit like a football team, or, you know, we call it the membership draft, and pilot end users are called members. And we will help HR people in an hour long call figure out who the right people are. And is it within a given team? Is it a diverse cohort across different sites or functions, et cetera? We can help them figure all of this out. But I think the biggest thing is getting agreement. If they need outside approval on budget, that's one thing. If they have the money and they have their own authority, that's fantastic. But to say that we're going to make an investment in employee development, and we're going to do something that's going to be very progressive and be very affordable, very, very quick, very visible, very high quality. And again, to just, you know, I think the biggest thing is to just have the courage to say, you know, let's make this happen. Because, you know, with any sort of change at any organization, it only happens if you have some sort of manager or executive that says, let's do something different, because organizations are designed to stay the same.
Got it. So whether they've done this themselves or they're working with you to figure out which employees they should work with, how do they then figure out what types of coaching they're going to provide? Because I'm assuming there's skill coaching, which is around what the employee does. So I want to become better at sales. I want to become a better developer. I want to become a better project management person. But then there's also leadership coaching. So I want to become a better communicator. I want to be able to lead a team better, and a host, a variety of a lot more ways that you can become better. So what are some of those areas, those different areas that employees can be coached on? And how do you figure out which of those skills have priority, unless you work on all of them and an all-encompassing coaching experience?
Well, and again, Bruce, another great question. The big distinction between sort of training and development and coaching is the amount of sort of content in technical skills training and coaching is very, very small comparative to training, which is the majority of it, right? Or other development programs. And so, you know, like if we're working with salespeople, we're not necessarily, you know, having them be better salespeople. They're already great salespeople. That's not their issue. Their issue with coaching is you're often addressing the things they're either not thinking about or the things they're avoiding. And you're putting a framework kind of above and around sales, or above and around IT if they're in IT, or above and around operations if they're in operations. And so our program is actually, we found from our research and analysis that of, you know, knowledge worker sort of like desk job, salaried sort of, you know, job employees, that their needs career-wise are very, very, very similar across both functions and industries. So if you think of it as an example, two examples I'll give you, one related to one's reputation, right? And whether you want to call it your brand or your larger kind of reputation or how you position inside and outside of an organization, you know, figuring out what that is and what you'd like that to be is sort of agnostic to which function you're in or which industry you're in. But it is something that can basically every professional, in particular in the digital era that we live in, where so much of people's impressions of us comes through a screen, is something that people need to be thoughtful and intentional about. Another example is around feedback. And this is a thing that HR people typically really love when I bring up this example, is so many employees, for some reason, think the only person in an organization that can give them feedback is their manager. And the only way that they can get feedback is through a formal process. And most, you know, performance management and feedback processes are a disaster, and employees hate them and management hates them. Even HR hates them. And so what we really do is we empower the employee to get feedback whenever they want and to pull it to them. And we have them encourage them particularly to get feedback from people other than their managers. So to speak to colleagues that they respect, you know, and to get, you know, a different position and perspective from them. And again, one of our members is one of their favorite features so far is this idea of getting feedback from others. And so, again, that's, you know, kind of independent of one's function or industry or particular role. And they can shape that around particular things that matter to them. So the pilot program doesn't, there's very few decisions that we burden HR or management people with making other than the size of the program and picking who's in it. After that, that's it. We're off to the races. And I think that's been a massive relief because so many programs and HR technologies require massive, massive configuration, which looks like a ton of decisions. And as we both know, within organizations, decisions are often not made alone, which then is like herding cats and a lot of alignment, and it's slow and, you know, political and laborious. And so, you know, we're focusing on a core set of experiences and skills and topics that are applicable to sort of all modern professionals to be both successful and satisfied in their careers.
That's pretty awesome. With that being said, does coaching need to be specialized based on other variables outside of role and industry, like gender, age, or ethnicity?
Yes, but here's the trick to that. That would be specialized by the coachee, not the coach.
Ah,
so
got it.
The world's leading expert on Bruce is Bruce. The world's leading expert on Ben is Ben. So there's no AI and algorithm or program or content mapping or anything, decision tree or logic, that could ever know more about you than you. So our methodology says, hey, like, you know, you may be, you know, first generation American. You may be a veteran, right? You may be someone that has to take care of a sick parent. You know, you may be someone that's very involved in your faith. You may be someone that, you know, wants to live in the country and has a long commute. You know, you may be someone that really likes to work, you know, kind of, you know, in kind of quiet and in solitary and not in a bustling sort of environment. Whatever those things are that each one of us, it's almost like, you know, if you were to, you know, map our genome or kind of our career genome, you know, that we have a super unique fingerprint of who we are and what we want and what we need, that no sort of system or technology, at least in our lifetimes, I believe, would ever be able to sort of like figure that out, because the brain is still powerful, more powerful than the computer, right? And than machines. And so what we really do is we empower people to figure out for themselves what those things are, contextual to their values, to their style and preferences, to their aspirations. And that's one of the big pitfalls of a lot of traditional talent development programs is they're predicated on people all being a certain way or wanting to be a certain way, you know? Oh yeah, you know, you should do this because then you can have a corner office one day. Well, you may not want to have an office at all. You may not even want to be in an office. You may not want to be a manager. So this is a way that, you know, the coaching, we encourage the employee to figure out really from an inside out perspective, what do they want? Which is a thing that frankly, most professionals don't consider. Most professionals are just reactive to the things that fall in their lap, to the LinkedIn recruiter that reaches out in an in-mail, et cetera. And they're not really, they're confusing what I would call availability with desirability. And we really focus the employee to figure out what do they actually desire and what do they need to be successful, which is truly unique to each person.
Hey, podcast listeners. We're about halfway through this episode. So now it's time for a word from our sponsor. But don't worry, we'll be back.
Hello, HR. It's me, your HR data. And I need to apologize. I'm sorry for being all over the place. I'm sorry for being difficult. I'm sorry for not being there for you. But it's not my fault. You put me in different HR systems and messy spreadsheets. But guess what? I now have a new friend, and their name is Employee Cycle. They can put all of me in one HR dashboard for you and keep me updated and simple so we'll better understand each other. Look, we're smarter when we're working together, so if you want me to show you my full potential, please go to EmployeeCycle.com to get your free demo today. That's EmployeeCycle.com. Promise me you'll go. Our relationship depends on it.
Okay, so back to this framework that we like to provide our listeners. They understand the benefits, they got the buy-in, they work with you or internally figured out who they're going to coach, why they're going to coach them, the best way to give them coaching, figure out what test case they're going to use first, and then try to roll out across the entire organization. That's all done. Now, to make sure that this was a great idea and it was a good use of resources, how does this HR person or whoever's listening measure the ROI of coaching and make sure that they actually had a positive impact on the organization?
Well, the simplest way is to ask the people getting the coaching, was it valuable and did it make a difference? And that's a big part of what we do, and we provide a ton of data. You know, whatever people tell us, employees tell us, the members, is confidential. Just like they would with a traditional executive coach, it's confidential, but we do aggregate data and insights across a group that still protects confidentiality, but gives insights to the HR leader or the manager about how things are going and how satisfied people are. And it's been there's a lot of different sort of insights that pop out of that in a sort of very compelling way. And I think that, you know, once you kind of get started and using a third party versus, I think sometimes people will try to coach internally, and, you know, generally it's very fraught because there's a lot of different conflicting alliances and priorities, et cetera. And so I think that, having an independent third party to provide the coaching is key. And what we find in terms of impact and that ROI is that, you know, people, one of the first things is that employees feel invested in and valued and seen and recognized by their organization. It's surprising. It's been, you know, that people, you know, again, because we don't believe in sort of the socialism of HR where everyone gets the same thing, that, you know, people know, and we set it off, and we have a kickoff, and we have the executive explain, not everyone at this company is getting this. You're getting this because you're special. And that's a very unique feeling in an employee's experience. Very seldom are they ever told that. And so we find that there's a massive, before they even experience pilot content, technology, et cetera, they just feel massively special and valued and invested in. And it's, you know, we actually just got a note today from someone that wrote to the senior executive, a handwritten note. And she sent me a text this morning of the note, you know, and says, even though we're only a couple weeks into the program, I'm already getting so much out of it. The format's great and makes me be more intentional about my career and development. Thank you for encouraging our company to offer this, right? And, you know, and it's just this idea that they're getting to prioritize and focus on their own growth and development on a weekly basis. That's another thing. You know, people would say, if I didn't have pilot, you know, I wouldn't focus or do this. I would just deliver and perform. And that, you know, we're really, I think part of it is looking at the how empowered employees are to meet their own needs and to make the asks that they need and not always rely on HR and management to solve problems. So kind of reducing the number of problems HR and management solve, you know, is one of the sort of metrics, I would say. And then, you know, and I think then just also that kind of entrepreneurial spirit to be agile and to try new things and to have the courage to experiment and to learn, which is often a very dangerous thing in companies that punish mistakes rather than sort of encourage incremental learning. So there's a whole variety of things. And of course, on a kind of a lagging metrics basis, looking at things like engagement, which, you know, is often measured sort of quasi infrequently, maybe annually or biannually, retention, promotion rates, et cetera, are other ways that can be measured. Again, those are often multi-year sort of lagging indicators, but we have a lot of data up front that we empower the HR professional with in beautifully formatted reports. There's no dashboard to spin or anything like that then they can show their senior management that this program is effective and working and valued. Which again has proved great results. We had multiple HR people that have gone again to their, whether it's their chief people officer or their CEO, with the analytics and the reports. And it's been like, wow, this seems like one of the best things going in our organization. And again, it really sets up that HR person to be and look like a star, because they are. And, you know, that's where we're really into having a win-win partnership with them.
Got it. And last question in this section. How long should it take for an HR person or anyone who's implementing this type of initiative to start to see results. I believe earlier you said that your company puts this in place for 12 months.
Yes.
So if you think that's the optimal amount of time, why? And is it possible to do this in a shorter amount of time?
So, you know, it potentially is, but it's a little like, you know, if you were to go to the gym and work with a personal trainer, you know, and you were going to like really get fit over the course of a year, could you do it in half a year? Sure. Would you probably need to go to at least twice as many appointments weekly to do that? You know, you can't really cheat the work, right? Like the work is the work. And so you can jam more work under a shorter period of time, but then it just is going to be for the employee, you know, doing more each week. And some of it from a coaching perspective, when you're talking about these big conceptual things around their reputation and their values and their passions and how to manage things and how to get feedback and how to be better. There's kind of a limited capacity to how much they can absorb every week in addition to everything else they're doing and have it be useful where they really take action. And so we are really optimized around from a lot of feedback and research, kind of the optimal mix of what can people take on every week so they can consistently do this. Because you could make pilot coaching something you do 5 hours a week, right? But that's the sort of thing that we probably have very low adoption or take-up rate because it's a very big burden. It would become this whole thing people have to manage, whereas pilot right now takes 10 to 15 minutes a week and 1 hour a month in live video coaching. So it's a 2 hour total monthly commitment that almost any professional can find time for, including doing it on their commutes and in the evenings, et cetera. So, you know, so I think that in terms of the program, we really are pretty, you know, stringent on the fact that we think a 12-month program is what really works and is often extended. People are looking to do more. I think in terms of the results, I mean, that note I just read to you, you know, was to a very senior leader at a large multi-billion-dollar company. And that's, I think, our third week into the program. We're seeing already, you know, people, you know, making certain asks and, again, just thinking differently and feeling more empowered, often within the first few weeks. And so, you know, again, like coaching, if I work with someone one-on-one, pilot works just like individual coaching in that regard. You see some quick gains at the start. And then the goal is to not have like, you know, explosive, you know, progress, but to have more of an incremental gain over time where it's really that trend line rather than, you know, like you can, you know, a crash diet where you've got good results, but then it falls apart. We're really focused on sustained development where kind of each week people are getting better and smarter and more empowered and more efficient. And so, you know, and again, part of it is we're always checking in with the employee to see how they're doing and giving data and pushing that data to the HR person very frequently. So they're always in the know about this, which I think compared to most HR technology, which is like very unclear if it's working or how many people are using it at things, we kind of are the opposite. But we're also working in developing some functionality to hopefully help the HR person and the manager be better leaders. And we're going to be building in some functionality where they get to be part of the coaching process and get some coaching themselves because we know that HR people are often the shoemaker's children.
Right. So thanks for answering all those questions about the coaching. And now I want to talk about how we actually met. So we met in New York at the Disrupt HR event, which was great. Mm-hmm. And it's awesome. Quick shout out to Disrupt HR. And you gave a talk titled "Your Employees Are Not Your Children."
Yes.
Which I thought was interesting, hilarious, informative. So I just had two questions about that.
Sure.
One, you said employers have a parent-child relationship with their employees, where the employees are kids and HR management is acting as the parents. Please explain.
So it's both the employers and the employees have that paradigm. It's not just that the employers are throwing this on the employee, that, you know, employees act in a very subordinate sort of like mother may I sort of way. And, you know, just like, you know, when we're growing up and we have parents and we all grew up in slightly different families, but nonetheless, there's some commonality that, you know, parents generally have a certain degree of control and power. And they do things for the child, right? And they control some of their decisions. And again, it's a very subordinate sort of relationship. And, you know, but then the thing is that makes sense when someone's 8 years old to make sure that they get fed and sleep and do homework and they're safe and don't run in the street and all those things, apart from being a good parent, you know? But when it comes to being, you know, when you're a grown man or woman, you know, in a job or career, we really need to dial up the employees, you know, source, you know, kind of agency over their own sort of needs and management to be a little bit more self-managed, which is a big kind of macro trend. There's a lot of research and conversation around this idea of like self-management, and really have, you know, employees connect with employers and management more as peers and partners. And again, not, no one's ever going to confuse like who's in charge and who makes the final decision, but really having people figure out things, you know, on their own, take a first pass at things. You know, again, some of the best employees often need some of the least supervision, but they need the most sort of like coaching and shared problem solving, et cetera. And so I think the big shift in what I was talking about in that talk was, you know, really not holding your employees small. It's amazing. I remember I had jobs where HR people would, you know, we were creating online, you know, forums within our company, you know, that are attributed to someone's name. And they're like, you know, screaming in meetings at me that I'm handing someone a loaded gun because they're going to say something inappropriate, you know, or say something confidential that they shouldn't. And I said, you know, gosh, you know, we've got bathroom stalls and no one writes on the bathroom stalls. You know, we've got, you know, emails and phones and all sorts of other different devices and ways to communicate that people don't use inappropriately. So I kind of just assume the good intent in people. And if you did a good job hiring, you probably have good people and you probably have policies to get rid of them if they're knuckleheads or do something bad or illegal or harassing. And those are people you want to get out quickly. But in general, employees are good. So you can trust them. And so a lot of, I think, for HR, because they have to deal with the 1 in 1,000 knucklehead bad apple, they create systems for the other 999 that treat them like the weakest link. Right. And I think I heard a podcast, Reed Hoffman, one of the LinkedIn co-founders, was interviewing Reed Hastings, which is the Netflix founder, which is a little confusing, the Reeds. But the Netflix guy, Reed Hastings, was saying his first company, which, you know, was sold for $700 million or something. What they did is every time they had like some sort of issue with employees, they would create a corrective action and change a system to dummy proof it. And what they found over time is the only employees that wanted to work there were dummies because they had an entire company and systems that was dummy proofed. And so at Netflix, he has an entirely different approach. And if you've ever read the Netflix culture deck, it's a very different approach that is much more aligned with kind of my mindset and that talk and pilot. And it's, you know, really saying that, you know, we're going to hire the right people and trust and empower them to think, you know, to think like owners and to and whatnot, and not to dummy proof things because one person did something, you know, poorly.
Nice. Thanks for that. And the next question, which you already alluded to earlier, but in your talk, you said HR, you need to stop working with the sickest patients. Think like an NFL team, draft the best. Please tell us what that means.
So a bit like, you know, HR, you know, the sickest patient sort of, you know, mantra is, you know, and it's almost the paradox of management. You know, you spend your time on the problems, you know, and, you know, in some ways that's a good thing, right? You're addressing issues. But when it comes to people development, you know, you want to be focusing on your best, right? And there's just so much time that HR spends on the worst, and whether it's progressive counseling and PIPs and all the other sort of things, or folks that are really sort of like struggling. And again, the best people are just out there performing typically, right? They're out selling, they're out operating, they're out coding, they're out, you know, marketing, they're out doing analysis, whatever they do, consulting. And again, they're kind of just like left alone. But those are the folks that from, if you think about, you know, how companies allocate capital, if you've got a mature company and how they allocate capital, they typically will have a process where they look at all the opportunities to maybe buy another company, to build a new technology, to change offices. They look at all these different ways that they can spend their capital allocation, and they stack them up and they find the highest revenue return opportunity, right? The highest ROI opportunity, you know, just because they're really investing. Well, HR should think of their time and their budgets in the same way. It almost like you're picking stocks, right? Or funds, right? You want to pick the things that are going to be things that you can get more return out of. Things that, you know, and those are going to be, frankly, your better people. The people that in a talent review are in the succession pipeline, that are on a HIPO list, the folks that lead employee resource groups, the folks that are good firm citizens, right? That have the right attitude. And sometimes they're way down in the organization. Sometimes there's people that, you know, Colleen Barrett at Southwest Airlines was the receptionist before she became the president, you know? And, you know, and so there are these opportunities where, you know, you find the right people and you really want to, just like that NFL example, you know, you're trying to field the best team and you're spotting the potential. And, you know, just like with the draft, there's some obvious picks, right? Some folks that you're kind of getting folks that are just that everyone's sort of after. But then there's also the thing where great teams are picking people that are a little bit of diamonds in the rough. But there are people that you know from some sort of data point you think have a lot of potential and that you want to invest in. And that's a big part of it is, again, really looking at people you want to take a bet on and build up and invest and not just have it be rolling out a program in this very sort of like, you know, communist sort of like rollout way that anyone can sort of do, but really saying, hey, gosh, who are these people that I really think, you know, are going to move the needle in this company and that are frankly worthy? It's a little bit of upgrading HR's even own self-esteem to say, hey, we got something great to offer here, whether it's pilot coaching or some training program or something else you're offering. You know, hold your chin a little higher as an HR professional and say, this is actually a gift and an asset, and I should be very selective about who I give this to, and they should be worthy of it. Rather than just, you know, posting it on a portal or an LMS and anyone can do it, saying, you know, gosh, this is a real gift and you've got to earn this or qualify for this.
Nice. So now we're going to end with one of my favorite sections of the podcast, which is what I like to call the real, the random, and the ridiculous. So I ask you a real question, a random question, and a ridiculous one. Are you ready?
Sure.
All right. So the real question. Do you like bread pudding? And if so, how do you like it made? this is a very real question, by the way.
Okay. I love bread pudding.
Nice.
Too many raisins. I had a bread pudding when I used to live in Denver over 10 years ago with the in Uptown. There was a restaurant that had bread pudding that had a bourbon caramel chocolate sort of thing mixed in with it that was absolute heaven. But I've had kind of bread puddings around the world and definitely a fan. But sweets in general, but bread pudding, absolutely.
Nice. I've taken on the name Bread Pudding Bruce. I love bread pudding. I love bread pudding. You could be Bread Pudding Ben.
If we ever do an event together, we could just cater bread pudding at every break. You know?
There we go. I think people would love it. Yeah, I like to call myself a bread pudding connoisseur. I eat it wherever I go. If it's on the menu, I eat it. If it's bad, I'm disappointed, but it is what it is. So the random question, what is your favorite season of the year and why?
Actually, it's funny. I had a big debate about this the other day because I always have said it's fall. My birthday's in the fall. Colorado is great for the fall. I love the East Coast for the fall and putting on cute fall clothes and being outside and hikes and pumpkins and this and that. But I actually think spring is becoming more of my ideal season because spring for me represents like this possibility and this anticipation of something to come, which is summer, which is delightful. And of course, I love summer, but spring, you know, gives me this sort of like hope and excitement and momentum and kind of ease. There's such delight that first day in the spring when it's, you know, delightfully warm or super sunny. And especially like in New York where we have kind of rough winters sometimes and really gray and things. I am all about that spring because I just there's something about it that's like a preview to something better. And I love being able to look forward to something.
Got it. All right. And the ridiculous question, what's the most ridiculous way you've seen companies try to tackle coaching?
I've seen a few, so I'm thinking about, won't call anyone out by name, you know, I take confidentiality seriously, but I'll just tell you, you know, directionally, you know, I think a couple different things, you know, one I've seen where there's an internal coach, oftentimes the HR generalist that is certified and maybe in coaching, that's the generalist looking over like that employee group that's supposed to be the coach. And that completely doesn't work because that's the same person that if there's the employment relations issue is going to be handling it. The same person who's doing the comp, you know, and variable comp things, the same, you know, so there's a lot of conflict. And so that's not independent. And therefore, that person will never be a good coach for that person. They could be a good coach, maybe for someone in a different part of the business that they didn't have HR business partner responsibility or COE responsibility for. But if they're, representing the person as their HR person and, you know, supposed to be their sort of executive coach, I mean, HR people are always kind of de facto coaches and can give advice. And that's fine as long as they're sort of wearing their HR person hat, not trying to be something else. That's a big one that I see that, you know, I always look at that and I say, well, that doesn't work. I've also seen, you know, things where, the information from coaching sort of like gets back to the company where, people get a coach and it really is kind of an assessment of the person, almost like a trap or a test that people didn't realize or didn't, you know at the time. So that's a big thing that seems like a big violation and a sort of trick, you know. And I also think, you know, confusing, coaching with training again is another one where they kind of collapse them. They call training coaching and it's not. And then I'd say probably like the final one is, and this one happens a lot. And I think this is related to the cost of coaching is I've had a lot of folks and people that I've done business with and I've ended up not doing business with that. They want to give people coaching, but they're like, it's almost like, you know, they think it's like an acupuncture session or something or a massage, you know? Oh, you know, I like to buy them each a session, right? Or I'd like to buy them, or they come and they say, I want to buy a 4-pack. Well, like, that's not how I run as an independent executive coach. You meet with me as a minimum every week for 4 months, right? And that's just it. There's no negotiation on that. And, you know, like it'd be like going to a personal trainer and thinking you're going to have someone get shredded by going to an hour-long training course. So I think that, or training session. So I think that's one of the last things is just, people, having very unrealistic expectations about what it takes to change human behavior, which takes time and effort and consistency. And so that's part of why a program over a longer term with many touch points is better. And that's where we created the one with Pilot that makes it far more affordable.
Ben, this has been super awesome. Thank you for being such a great guest.
Thank you, Bread Pudding
Bruce.
My pleasure to be here.
There we go. And Bread Pudding Ben. It was amazing. So, Ben, where can people find you and Pilot on the internets?
I am very findable. Ben Brooks, BROOKSNY, is my name on Twitter and on Instagram, on LinkedIn. I love to connect with people on LinkedIn and Twitter and Instagram. And my Facebook's pretty open as well. But then Pilot is Pilot_Inc. on Twitter and on Instagram, and we're on LinkedIn and Facebook. And if you'd like to email me, you can go to our website. We got live chat. You can try a demo of our product there, etc. It's pilot.coach, www.pilot.coach, because we're a coaching company. Or you can email me personally, and it's very simple, ben@pilot.coach. So we'd love to hear from you. Love to get on a call, love to meet with executives, you know, show you some of our research and sales. Our sales collateral is great and can help you, you know, tee up an internal conversation. But we are all about helping HR people be successful. And there's so many things in the market that actually, really set HR people up for failure. And so we're really empathetic to the busy, overburdened HR person that wants to make a difference. And we're a low input, high impact solution. So please reach out. We'd love to partner with you, regardless if you're in a government agency or you're help run a union or you're a nonprofit or public or private company, whatever. Regardless, we can probably help you out. So please reach out and let us know how we can help.
Perfect. And we'll definitely put all of that information in the show notes. Last question, is Pilot hiring? And if so, for what positions?
We are always open and interested, and we're actually modifying our website to put kind of an assessment sort of thing in on our website soon. But interviewed someone this week. We're looking for people to help with product management and developing more of our coaching features and methodologies. And we'll also be looking for people to help with delivery and interacting with our members each week via text and eventually Slack and email. And we text a lot of our experiences through text message, which employees love. And so we'll be hiring people both on the product and the delivery side here in the next month or two. And then early next year, we'll probably be hiring a full-time engineer. And we, of course, are going to always pick the best candidate, but we love to have a diverse slate. And so, in particular, people that are passionate about coaching, and we got people all around the country. So would love to hear from you too. And if it's not now, it could be later, or there's other product advisory council that we have that we have people advising us, and they get to say that they advise a high growth startup and they're helping us shape a better product. And it's a low impact thing, but they get to experience pilot coaching for free as a part of it. So a lot of ways to get involved. So reach out, and we'd love to connect you.
Great. Well, thanks again to Ben for being such an awesome guest and for dropping so much wisdom about coaching. Hey, listeners out there, if you love this episode, please leave us a 5-star rating on iTunes, subscribe to our podcast feed on your favorite podcast player, and stay tuned for the next episode. And for all you HR pros out there, continue to hire, train, and retain the best workforce possible. Later, kids.